From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When you walk into a pharmacy with a prescription, you usually expect it to be filled. You don't expect a lecture on morality from the pharmacist. You certainly don't expect your prescription to be refused or confiscated on moral grounds. But it's happening. Across the country, a small but growing number of pharmacists are refusing to fill prescriptions they find morally objectionable. At issue, birth control and the morning after pill. Now state lawmakers are getting involved, sometimes for the pharmacists and their conscience, sometimes for the right to treatment. Tonight on Point, individual pharmacists refusing to fill prescriptions for birth control and the drugstore counter as the latest front in the battle over reproductive rights. We begin tonight in California, where state lawmakers have been holding hearings today on legislation that would require pharmacists to fill prescriptions for emergency contraceptives. Jordan Rao is a staff writer with the Los Angeles Times. He joins us from Sacramento. Jordan, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here, Tom.
So we've got states who stick up for what they call a conscience clause, states who are looking at a professional duty law. California is going that way to require, or at least considering requiring pharmacists to fill the prescription that's handed them. Is that it, Jordan?
Yeah, I mean, this issue has really become the prototypical blue state, red state issue, and California is just about as blue as it gets. I guess it could have some competition with Massachusetts. But there are a couple of bills in the Democratic controlled legislature that would require pharmacists to fill all prescriptions, even if they found them morally repugnant. There are some conscience clauses, as they're called, built in, where you can where if you're a pharmacist and you don't want to do it, you can pass it along to a colleague, or you can arrange for a nearby pharmacy to fill it. But if those options aren't possible, or if they cause undue hardship for the patient, then the pharmacist would have to fill it under this legislation.
Now, Jordan, this fits into a national picture. We've got in Georgia, Mississippi, South Dakota, Arkansas, at least those four states already have laws that allow pharmacists to refuse to fill prescriptions if they find them objectionable, and another 8, 9, 10 or more states who are considering doing that.
Correct.
This is the opposite direction from California.
Right. Well, those are, it really does come down to, the politics of the state. And a group of pro-life pharmacists called Pharmacists for Life has formed in the last couple of years, and they've been pushing this issue. And it's basically on both sides become very ideologically driven. There have been actually pretty few cases that have come up in states. There was one last week in Chicago that caused the Illinois governor to issue an emergency order requiring all pharmacists to fill prescriptions. But the number of cases are pretty small and anecdotal, but both sides, both the pro-life side as well as pro-choice advocates, have really seized on this issue as sort of the next fight in the abortion wars. And so, whoever has the biggest sway in the states are really pushing hard. So in California, Planned Parenthood and NARAL, for instance, are behind one of the bills here.
That is, the bill to require pharmacists to deliver on the prescription if it's handed to them. And on the other side, what, abortion foes?
Correct. And the abortion foes are pushing this as a good entry point on this issue. Pharmacies in the past hadn't been as much of an issue, but when the emergency contraceptive pill became available, that was much more abhorrent to pro-life pharmacists and to a lot of people than just filling birth control pills, which some have problems with.
And what about the pharmaceutical of professional associations? Where are they coming down, Jordan?
They're mostly coming down on they're in California is really the only place I can speak with any knowledge. And
I should say pharmacist professional organizations, not pharmaceutical, of course.
Yeah, no, the pharmacist organization. There are about 25,000 pharmacists here, and they have their own group. And they have some reservations about the bills, but they're not so much about the ideological stuff. They're staying clear of that. They don't want laws that put particular requirements on pharmacists as opposed to other medical professionals. They're worried about that. They're worried about anything that could lead to discipline of pharmacists. So, they're sort of looking out for their own, but they're not, they've taken positions of supporting some of this legislation if it's changed so it doesn't create any professional problems. But, I don't think that the vast majority of pharmacists, I don't think, are at this point, know, particularly involved in this, and so the associations are trying not to get caught in what's really a very politicized issue.
The numbers are unclear. We've seen everything up to 180 instances of this over the last 6 months, down to lower numbers. Doctors and nurses in most states already covered by a conscience clause, so the issue here would be to extend it in the red states you're talking about to pharmacists as well.
That's correct, and again, it is hard to tell how much. I mean, you know, in California, for instance, there have been no complaints to the Professional Disciplinary Board, but there was a woman who testified today in the California Assembly who did talk about having trouble getting one of her prescriptions filled.
And we're going to hear from her in just a moment. What's the prospect for the legislature, these two bills likely to pass? California likely to demand professional duty?
I think there's a really good chance that they'll pass. I mean, California was the first state to require pharmacies to provide emergency contraception, and, you know, it's a very liberal legislature.
So it looks like it might be coming there. Jordan Rao, we've got to go, but we appreciate your time. Thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Jordan Rao, staff writer for the Los Angeles Times. He spoke with me from Sacramento, California. We're talking tonight about individual pharmacists refusing to fill prescriptions for birth control and the morning after pill and the drugstore counter as the latest front in the reproductive rights battle. You can join the conversation. If a pharmacist is personally opposed to birth control or the morning after pill, should he or she have the right to refuse to dispense those drugs? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Earlier today, I spoke with Karen Romano, a Los Angeles woman whose pharmacist last November balked at filling a prescription for misoprostol, a drug he believed she might use for an abortion. Romano was called up to Sacramento today to testify before the California State Assembly on behalf of legislation that would require pharmacists to dispense all lawful drugs. I asked Karen Romano to describe the circumstances that had her turning to a pharmacist last November.
I had been pregnant, and my doctor had discovered through an ultrasound that there was fetal demise, meaning that I was miscarrying the baby. Mm-hmm. And she therefore suggested that I undergo a DNC because my body hadn't yet discharged the fetal tissue.
Right.
So she gave me a prescription for the drug misoprostol to prepare my body for the procedure, mm-hmm, by softening the cervix.
You took that to the pharmacy, and what happened?
I did. I had been using this pharmacy for a couple of years for all of my family's prescriptions, and I dropped it off thinking that I would pick it up closer to the date that I would need it. I had a couple of days left, and I went home and I got a call from my obstetrician's office, from the secretary, saying that one of the pharmacists where I had given my prescription, they had called my doctor's office demanding to know why I needed this medication, and basically saying that he would refuse to give it to me unless he knew why I was using it. So the doctor's office called me, and they felt that sort of delving into my personal affairs in that way, trying to find out what I specifically needed it for, was not any of his business. It was confidential information, and they suggested that I get the prescription filled elsewhere. I called the pharmacist, and I asked him point blank, what was the problem with filling my prescription? You filled my family's prescriptions in the past. Why did you call my doctor about this? And he gave me a bunch of answers that were completely illogical and evasive.
And what were they suspecting, or what were they concerned about?
Well, I believe that they were concerned about this drug can also be used to soften the cervix in the case of an abortion as,
mm-hmm,
well.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked him outright, are you trying to find out whether or not I'm going to be using this drug for an abortion? And he said that he was. And I said, and what if that were the case? And he said that he would refuse to give it to me.
Straight up.
And then he said to me, but don't worry, because now I understand what you're using it for, and basically because he approved, he would therefore let me have it.
How did it feel to you, Karen Romano, in those difficult circumstances? You've just effectively had a miscarriage. You're waiting to go through this follow-up medical procedure, and the pharmacist is saying to you, you'll answer to me.
It was horrifying. It was absolutely horrifying. I'm on a just from the immediate sense of the concern, will I be able to get this medication that I need? But stepping back from it, just it was completely chilling to realize that even though one has a prescription for medication from a very reputable doctor and you really do need this medication and time is of the essence, that you may be denied it simply because of a pharmacist's moral judgment. And I also felt a sense that he was invading my personal life, and he's a complete stranger to me, and it was a very horrible feeling in addition to the horrible feeling of knowing that we had lost a very wanted child.
Now California is considering legislation that would essentially require pharmacists to fill prescriptions. Lloyd Levine, an assemblyman from Van Nuys, has said the job of a pharmacist is to fill a prescription, not to be a doctor, not to be a moral advisor. Are you seconding that notion, Karen Romano?
Completely. Not just for cases like mine. I mean, heaven forbid there's a rape victim who has to endure the horrendousness of being raped and then the aftermath of going to a hospital and having the exam and the police report and all of that, and then she needs a morning after pill. And to think that she could be denied in circumstances like that, where time is so of the essence and she's been through so much, it's horrifying to me to think of that.
But what if a pharmacist really doesn't want to be party to dispensing drugs that might be used for an abortion?
Well, then he should find a way for the consumer to have what he or she needs. So if he doesn't want to actually fill it himself, then he should have a colleague do it so that the patient can get what he or she needs without any problem. We have an expectation that when our doctor gives us a prescription that we will be able to get the drugs that we need, and I think that that expectation should be a reality. And if the pharmacist has an issue with it, doing it himself, then it seems that he should somehow, it's his obligation to make some sort of arrangements so that the consumer does indeed get what the consumer needs.
Karen Romano, thank you very much for sharing your story with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Karen Romano joined us from Los Angeles. We're talking tonight about the growing debate over individual pharmacists refusing to fill prescriptions for birth control. If the pharmacist behind the counter is opposed to birth control and the morning after pill, should he or she have the right to say no when you present a prescription? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the growing debate over individual pharmacists refusing to fill prescriptions for birth control, about the drugstore counter becoming a new front in the reproductive rights battle. You can join the conversation tonight. What should come first at the pharmacy counter? The pharmacist's right to conscience or your right to treatment? And have you been refused medicine by a pharmacist who objected on personal, moral grounds to your prescription? Is this just the latest battlefront in the culture wars? Where is it leading? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined right now from New Orleans, Louisiana, by Lloyd Duplantis, Jr. He's a pharmacist who refused to dispense birth control medication at a pharmacy there and ultimately opened his own pharmacy in Gray, Louisiana. Mr. Duplantis, thanks for being with us tonight.
You're welcome.
So was it exactly that led you to go out and open your own pharmacy?
Well, the one of the issues was so that I could avoid this particular type of practice as far as the birth control pills and the birth control chemicals, and just be able to practice in a method that I could serve my community in an area that was needed, and also be able to earn a living and do what I enjoy without having to deal with a particular part of the practice that I just didn't care to deal with, and I could see some real problems involved in it. So I just opened up my own store, and it's worked out well for me.
So in your own pharmacy, you simply don't sell these drugs, medications, this birth control pills and chemicals, as you describe them.
That's right.
And they're just not there. If someone comes in and asks for them, what's your message?
Well, I don't have them in stock.
So it's, sorry, we don't sell them here. Lloyd Duplantis, on what grounds have you pursued this? What in your conscience has led you to this? Is it private morality? Is it religious teaching? Describe the background to this for us.
Well, it's science. That my church, of course, when the Catholic Church has a stand that everyone's very familiar with, but as a scientist and as a medical practitioner and as a pharmacist, I needed to understand why, and so I started researching the matter and the chemistry to support the fact that these chemicals are dangerous in every woman's case. Anytime a healthy woman takes these particular chemicals to control her fertility, it's very dangerous, it's always harmful to her, and it always has the potential to harm or kill her unborn child.
You know, a lot of people would argue with you on that, but
no,
still...
I'd like to argue with scientists, not with people who are not understanding.
But when a woman... believes or thinks she's in need of this drug. Maybe there's an extraordinary circumstance. We just heard about a woman who'd had a miscarriage. The fetal tissue had not been discharged. She needed misoprostol to help do that and was refused. Do you think that's right?
Well, that's a case of a medical indication that she had already, if I'm understanding you correctly, she's already miscarried and she needs that drug to complete it, then
yes.
Certainly she has a right to it. So I wouldn't necessarily, that's not what I'm dealing with. We're dealing with healthy women taking chemicals to control their fertility. We don't have any problem with people controlling their fertility. Your reproductive rights are your own, but we're not going to sell chemicals that can poison or kill you to do it.
Mr. Duplantis, do you think that every pharmacist should have the right, whatever pharmacy they're working in, to exercise their personal conscience on this front?
Well, absolutely, because we do it on every prescription. Every prescription, we exercise our personal conscience. Every time I fill a prescription, I have to make a conscientious decision if this medication fits this person, if this dosage is right, if there's any problems in regard to the individual. So every prescription, I make a personal conscientious decision regarding it.
And what do you think about the fact that these drugs are legal? They're fully legal under U.S. law. If a woman simply couldn't get them because, let's say, she faced a solid rank of pharmacists who refused, is there some infringement on a woman's right to treatment here?
Well, ultimately, we act like judges. There's a lot of laws that the government has passed that judges decide are not proper. We know about Vioxx, we know about Redux, we know about Celdene, we know about Bakall, and the list goes on of drugs that have been approved by the FDA and ultimately hurting people. We're saying that these chemicals are the most dangerous that have ever been put on the market, and that they enjoy a political immunity, they enjoy a diplomatic immunity, a sacred cow status that is not being faced with our society, and we're trying to call a question and help people understand so they don't hurt themselves or kill themselves or hurt or kill their unborn children because they're trying to achieve something which they have a right to achieve. We have no problem with them achieving their reproductive rights and their fertility control. We don't want to dispense things that will kill them or hurt them.
So it offends your religion and your professional sense, and you've just said no in your case by setting up an entirely independent pharmacy that simply doesn't sell them. Lloyd Duplantis, Jr. in New Orleans, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
You're welcome.
I'm joined now from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, by Arthur Kaplan. He's chair of the Department of Medical Ethics at the University of Pennsylvania, director of the Center for Bioethics there. Arthur Kaplan, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So this has just blown up like a storm out of left field. I had no idea this was going on, and suddenly we've got state after state that's considering legislation along very polarized lines, kind of red and blue, as we heard earlier, to either empower individual pharmacists to deny prescriptions at the counter or to compel them to fill those prescriptions. Mm-hmm. How do you see what's happening here as a medical ethicist, Arthur Kaplan? First of all, what's the tradition with pharmacists? Have they traditionally been empowered by professional ethics to say no at the counter?
Pharmacists historically have not exercised much in the way of a conscience clause in terms of carrying out requests for prescriptions, whether they agree on religious grounds or not, about the purposes to which they're put. Doctors and nurses, however, have historically exercised, if you will, their conscience or their personal morality. There are certainly doctors and nurses who will not and have not for decades been involved with abortions. There are certainly doctors and nurses who've said over the years that they find day-after pills unacceptable, emergency mm-hmm. contraception. So pharmacy, I think, has been somewhat immune from this. And I do think, you asked our pharmacist from Louisiana earlier, mm-hmm. is this part of the culture wars? 100%.
That meaning that this is, in effect, the reproductive rights battle taken right to the drugstore counter.
Exactly. It's being fought over at the Walgreens and the CVS and the private pharmacy, and basically people saying, my values are more important than your health.
Now, in many big urban areas, if one pharmacist refused to fill a prescription, somebody can go somewhere else. It's not that big a deal. But
right.
I suppose there are rural areas where a person could have trouble getting to another pharmacy. And
oh, absolutely. There are, believe it or not, there are still places in this country where there might not be a pharmacy for 50 or 60 miles. It may not be possible for someone to get that far. So if a local pharmacist says, I won't do X, they're effectively cutting off access on their values to something that is an approved drug, is legal to sell. One of the things to think about here, Tom, is the different types of healthcare settings. Hmm. Remember, for example, Catholic hospitals have never offered in vitro fertilization services or abortion services.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They will tell you that when you come in and you choose to go to that facility. But public facilities and corporate facilities that claim to serve the general public, or military facilities, or, for example, the Veterans Administration,
yes,
there I think the rules have to be a little different. So if one wants to exercise conscience, it's certainly fine to do what our friend in Louisiana did and open up a store and maybe put a sign up saying, I don't have the following,
mm-hmm,
and that's how it's going to be. I
mm-hmm
think he does have that right. There is no right to health care in America, remember.
Mm.
But if you're at the VA hospital, or if you're at Walgreens, the chain store, and they say, we sell legitimate drugs, then I'm not sure they can employ somebody who won't prescribe the whole range of things.
But they do.
They do, although their out is they cover. So they try to make sure they've got someone who will do it, even if an individual pharmacist won't do it.
You're a medical ethicist. Is it possible to lay down a blanket, kind of philosophically justified framework here? Could you say to all pharmacists, you do or do not have the right of conscience to refuse this kind of drug?
I'd say this. I think since in America we haven't created a right to health care, it's hard to command or force any particular health care provider to provide a service. Once a service is started, you could certainly say that the principle there is you can't abandon or stop. So if someone came in and said, I'm on birth control pills, and this drugstore has filled them, and I need a refill, believe it or not, that's a different situation than
mm-hmm
saying, I need to start my birth control prescription, if you see what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely have an ethic that prohibits abandonment of someone, but it would be very hard to...
Sounds like we may have lost Arthur Kaplan there for a moment. Let's turn now to New York City. I'm joined there by Karen Pearl. She's president of Planned Parenthood Federation of America. Karen Pearl, thanks for being with us tonight.
It's a pleasure, Tom.
And also to St. Louis, Missouri, where I'm joined by Ed Martin. He's director of the Americans United for Life Center for the Right of Conscience. Mr. Martin, good evening.
Thank you. Nice to see you, Tom.
Welcome to the show.
Nice to be with you, Tom.
First to you, Ed Martin. You've got a big debate on your hands suddenly here, something that we hadn't seen before, and now the numbers are vague, but clearly some number of pharmacists are taking these moral decisions into their own hands, exercising their conscience right across the counter when someone shows up with their prescription. We've even read reports of people, of pharmacists confiscating prescriptions, refusing to give them back because they didn't think that was the right kind of medicine to be dispensed. How do you see that? How do you justify that?
Well, I guess the first point, Tom, to maybe not correct you exactly, but to restate what we talked about, it's not really that new a debate. I'd position it, I think people will disagree, but it's a kind of workers' rights debate that has been going on since Roe v. Wade happened, but it's gone through progressions in all the states. It's new on pharmacists, for sure. It's newer these last years. But in the 70s, 80s, 90s, these issues were being addressed in most of the states. In fact, 47, 48 of the states have addressed these things specifically. So,
and we've heard about the conscience clause that is extended to doctors and to nurses. But now we're dealing with pharmacists who are being asked to dispense legal medications, drugs.
Right, but not exactly true. Again, it wasn't just doctors and nurses. In some of the states, they addressed all forms of health care, broader rights of conscience. In other words, the debate is actually coming out of, really probably in America, some of the conscientious objection questions in Vietnam. That's where I think we're missing a little bit of this debate. That when every decision, the pharmacist said it, every decision we all make has a basis in our conscience, that is, in how we go about making our acts, and that cannot be separated out and asked to leave your conscience at the door. That's a false distinction that, first of all, it doesn't work, I don't think, philosophically, and second of all, in America, we really have a tradition of protecting religious liberty, which is where our conscience isn't often, for many of us, it's religious. Some of it is pure ethical and, you know, not informed by religion, but so I think there's that missing from the debate.
Does a citizen have a right to enter a pharmacy and expect to be to get a legal drug that they've been prescribed by a medical doctor that they need?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that if you go back to the woman from California, what she said was the pharmacist took a number of steps, And I think the person who delivers a prescription from a doctor, the way the healthcare system is set up, is the pharmacist is required under their own norms to go through some steps. So if a woman comes in and is 55 years old and says, I need birth control, here's a valid prescription, the doctor, the pharmacist is required to say, excuse me, some things aren't computing, and call over. So,
but the pharmacist told her, as Karen Romano relates it to us, that if she had been seeking this in preparation for an abortion, he would have refused to give it to her. Now, it's a legal medication. Is he right to refuse it?
I don't think that's what she said, actually. But
I think he is.
I think that pharmacist is perfectly within his rights, mm-hmm. his rights of conscience, to refuse to fill a prescription like that. I think mm-hmm. that is correct, right?
Karen Pearl, let me turn to you. How do you interpret what's going on here? Step back, large frame for us. What's happening here?
What's happening here is that we have women who go to see their doctors, who share with their doctors their most personal and intimate information. The doctor then works with that woman to decide whether or not she is eligible from a medical perspective to be taking birth control. Then she walks into the pharmacy, like any of us in America, with a valid prescription, with the absolute expectation that that prescription will be filled. And the question of conscience is whose conscience? And it is the woman's conscience in this case that needs to prevail, rather than the conscience of somebody else who is seeking to impose their values on this woman. She has done her due diligence. She has talked with her doctor. She has done what she needs to do. And it's her rights that are at stake. It's her conscience that matters.
I want to understand how you see the sort of larger picture here as well. Of course, abortion is under fire from many sides in this country these days. Do you see this as a new front being deliberately opened, sort of counter by counter, shutting off access to birth control, to the morning after medication, Karen Pearl?
Right. Tom, this is not about abortion. Contraception is basic health care for women. 95%.
You say it's not about abortion, but some of the abortion opponents say it's very intimately related.
Right. And what we need to remember and we need to remind everyone is that contraception is used by 95% of American women who are trying to be responsible, who are planning their families, who are seeking to prevent unintended pregnancy. Abortion is ending an established pregnancy. Mm. Contraception is used so that the woman will not become pregnant when she is not yet ready to be pregnant, so she doesn't have to face a decision about whether or not to end pregnancy.
And, of course, there we go even further, because there are, of course, people who object to contraception, chemical contraception itself. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I want to turn to our callers. They've been waiting. Dylan's calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Dylan. You're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
First thing I'd like to say is just to talk a little bit about contraception, to answer your guest there from Planned Parenthood. Contraception, the birth control pill, the morning after pill, can work in three ways, and it says so right in the label. I won't go through the first two ways, which are contraception authentically. The third way it can act is as an abortifacient. A little boy or girl is conceived in the earliest stages of pregnancy. The chemicals from the birth control pill or the morning after pill, the so-called morning after pill, alter the lining of the uterus, making it inhospitable for that little boy or girl in the embryonic stage.
Dylan, we hear you. Our time is short before the break. We hear where you're coming from, I think, on these drugs and probably on abortion as well. What about the pharmacist's right to say no, Dylan? What do you think?
Well, if a doctor can say no to performing an abortion, a pharmacist has a right to say no to giving a drug that is not medical care. It alters an already healthy state in a woman and mutates it so she can have sex without considering it's sex is... Sex has a purpose.
Sounds like we hear exactly where you're coming from. Karen Pearl, that's addressed to you, a challenge from Dylan.
Well, I think, you know, we must recognize that contraception is used to prevent pregnancy. It is something that, in fact, is one of the healthiest, safest drugs in America. All the guests who are saying that it makes women sick or it makes women die, none of that is true. Women, in fact, take contraception so that they can stay healthy and that they can be responsible. And so not providing birth control to a woman who has been medically cleared by her doctor for being eligible for contraception just makes no sense.
We have got to take a short break here. We'll be back with Arthur Kaplan, with Ed Martin, with Karen Pearl. You can join us as well. We're talking tonight about the growing debate over individual pharmacists refusing to fill prescriptions for birth control, about the drugstore counter becoming a new front in the reproductive rights battle. You can join us. Is this just the latest battlefront in the culture wars? Where is it leading? And if doctors don't have to perform abortions, should pharmacists be required to dispense morning after pills? How do you see it? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the growing debate over individual pharmacists refusing to fill prescriptions for birth control. You can join us tonight. Is this the abortion war moving to hand-to-hand combat over the drugstore counter? If state laws protect a druggist's right to conscience, do pharmacists become a kind of morals police? On the other hand, what kind of country forces people, pharmacists, to do things they find morally wrong? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight from Philadelphia by Arthur Kaplan, chair of the Department of Medical Ethics and director of the Center for Bioethics at the University of Pennsylvania. From New York City by Karen Pearl, president of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America. And from St. Louis by Ed Martin, director of the Americans United for Life Center for the Right of Conscience. And right now from Raleigh, North Carolina by Grace. Hi, Grace. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I was calling in, just to sort of ask, well, where is the line on conscience? Because if we go down that road, and I think strong arguments can be made for it, what if I'm a Catholic pharmacist that believes sex is only for procreation, a little bit like what the previous caller referred to, and so I refuse to fill Viagra prescriptions for men I have reason to think have wives that are past menopause? Or what if I decide that I think this morphine prescription is too high, and in point of fact, I don't realize that this dying patient may be at a level where they need it.
And on and on. Where does the line go? Grace, let us pick it up. Arthur Kaplan, how about it? What if, let's say, what if a pharmacist is opposed on religious grounds to homosexuality and, I don't know, is refusing HIV aid, you know, antiretroviral drugs? Or is there a line in the sand issue here, a drifting line issue?
I don't think there is. I think conscience can be extended by the individual practitioner wherever they want to take it. I'll repeat again, this is what we're watching is nothing more than opening a new front, I think, on the culture fights about reproductive issues and related issues. By the way, I expect that we're going to see this fight come into the end-of-life care area as
after Terry Schiavo.
Yes, and feeding tubes become an issue for Catholic physicians, Catholic dietitians, Catholic nurses because of recent papal teachings. And I support, despite having some sympathy with Ms. Pearl's points, conscience is going to extend very far. But the question becomes in American society, if you work at a government institution, a public institution, and you refuse on various grounds to prescribe health care related drugs and devices, can you hold your job? You can exercise your conscience, but one might say there's a contract or there are arrangements that are going to have to be made, and if you work in these public facilities, you're going to have to agree to do it, or they're going to have to promise to cover whatever you won't do with someone else who will do it.
Will that be true even as individual states begin to extend the conscience clause protection to pharmacists?
I think it's going to be difficult to do that, and I think we're going to find ourselves in some parts of the country, as we do with abortion or as we see with certain types of medically related contraception things emerging now, where you won't be able to get it if you live in a particular part of the country and someone says, I run this drugstore and this is what it is, and I give A, B, and C, and that's it. You know, you can imagine the Jehovah's Witness drugstore that will not sell any blood-derived products, and that's how it's going to be, and they won't do it. Now, this kind of balkanization is not something that I bless. I'm not cheering about it, but I'm simply saying, if you take conscience seriously, and I do, and if you don't have a right to health care in this country, and we don't, then a diminishment of access is one of the things I think we're going to see.
Ed Martin, can you imagine pharmacists in individual parts of the country presenting a kind of united front? So, and would this be, in fact, be your goal, that in some areas you just couldn't find a pharmacist who would prescribe, let's say, the morning after pills?
That's hard to say. I mean, I'm not sure that that's what anyone that's pursuing and kind of working on this issue is really thinking about. I guess I'd push it back. You asked, how do you define conscience and what, I guess you say, how do you define religion? I think the law in America, which is really one of the things that we focus on, and protecting workers' rights, is really clear that religious liberty, we can figure this out in America, what religious liberty means, and what we know it means is just what Art Kaplan has said. We don't compel people to do things without there being a right that requires them to observe a duty. And all we're saying is these workers are raising their hand and saying for their conscience, it is what's at stake is more than a contract or something else. It's about who they are as a person, where they see themselves going in some grand way. For some, it's religious; some, it's ethical.
What about the other lives that are impacted? Let's say someone needs a morning after pill. They're in a rural area. They don't have endless numbers of pharmacies. Of course, time is an issue. You know, every hour that goes by makes the pill less effective after a certain point. Isn't that quite an intervention in their lives?
Well, there's certainly, you know, we certainly don't sit around and hope for people to be inconvenienced and troubled and have terrible times physically and other ways. But what we usually don't do is require people to do something that they understand to be a bad act, acting against their conscience in order to help those other people. Now, we sometimes require it. Art can tell you ethics, there are times you require it. But generally, legally, we're very careful about that. And that's all we're saying, because what this is a slippery slope here, really, for people, just like Art Kaplan said, to debate the question of end of life. All we're saying is workers' rights say, don't make me go against my conscience and violate that.
Thomas is calling from Durham, North Carolina. Hi, Thomas. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. I just wanted to comment on the fact that these are workers, and if they don't perform their job as their employer would like, then they should be fired. For instance, I mean, if CVS, you know, a pharmacy, were not to be able to fulfill a certain prescription, I wouldn't go there. If they can guarantee me they will, then I will, and the market will work it out. And that way you can preserve both the liberty of the people wanting the prescription as well as the liberty of the people who are providing this prescription.
So you say leave it up to the market, Thomas. Don't get legislation involved here on either side.
Exactly. I mean, for instance, you don't say that people have to sell cigarettes, and you don't say that if they refuse to, they won't be fired.
Thomas, we've got it. Karen Pearl, how about it? California today debating a professional duty law that would require pharmacists to fill prescriptions, proper prescriptions that are given to them. On the other hand, a lot of other states, conscience clause. Thomas says, let the market solve this. Just legislators stay out of it.
Well, I agree that legislators should stay out of it, and I do believe, though, that pharmacists have a duty to fill valid and healthy prescriptions for women and for all people. Somebody earlier today said that this is a slippery slope, and I would like to suggest it is a slippery slope. But that slope that we're going down is people being able to intervene in the doctor-patient relationship. That is in a very, very dangerous way, that there will be people who will be presenting prescriptions that are perhaps life-saving for them, and a pharmacist may decide not to fill it. It's a slippery slope down a road that takes away good health care from people who have done what they need to do to make sure that the prescription that they're walking into that pharmacy with can, in fact, help them to take care of themselves. And that's a slope I don't think Americans want to go down. Every one of us has the expectation that when we walk in the door of that pharmacy, that our prescription will be filled. And this just goes in the face of that. And I think as a public, we may want to say it's market forces. You know, if people want to put big signs in their window that say we don't fill these kinds of prescriptions, I think that will have a negative effect. But more importantly, I think there's an expectation of every single one of us that when we have a valid prescription from a doctor or another healthcare provider and we walk into a pharmacy, it is our expectation that it will be filled.
And what about that pharmacist's moral position? His or her personal moral position, Karen Pearl? You're suggesting they should just set that aside and fill the prescription?
That I am suggesting that, because it is not about their moral position. It is about the patient, in this case a woman, if it's about contraception. It is about her conscience. It's about her moral position. It is about the discussion that she had privately with her health care provider that got her that prescription. That's what matters in this relationship. And a pharmacist can't do that, I would suggest that they ought not to be in public drugstores.
I think we've got both views. Let me get one more call here, Ed Martin. Rita's calling from Durham, North Carolina. Hi, Rita. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to take this from a personal point of view. I take drugs that are maybe used as birth control for contraception, but they also can be used for other medical purposes.
Mm-hmm.
I take mine after due consultation with my physician and for other reasons that I don't care to reveal.
Okay.
And I don't care to reveal them to my pharmacist. There's a doctor-patient confidentiality, but as far as I know, there is no patient-pharmacist confidentiality. So my trouble is not so much with my pharmacist's personal beliefs, which he certainly has a right to have, but with the questioning that goes on to me before he decides whether or not his moral conscience will be upset.
You don't want to have to explain yourself to the man behind the counter when you've got the prescription in hand.
Exactly. That it might be legitimate reasons for non-contraceptive purposes.
Mm-hmm.
It might be for contraceptive purposes. But the point is what about my privacy in not revealing myself so my pharmacist can make sure his conscience is clear?
Rita, we've got it, and thanks for your call. Ed Martin, how about that? What about the privacy of the person on the other side of the counter?
Tom, I hope that, I find this unbelievable that we're sitting here and we're putting pharmacists down the way we are, and I certainly don't want to.
I think we're describing a relationship.
No, but we're not. We're not describing it accurately. What pharmacists do is not simply do what the doctor says. The system is, otherwise the doctors would deliver the drugs to the patients. What the pharmacists do is they are dispensing from a prescription, and they are called upon to make judgments
about it. But the consultation with the doctor's been done by the time Rita gets to the pharmacy.
But a pharmacist is not supposed to just sit there and say, there's the drugs. They're supposed to also be making a decision about who's standing before them, because all the examples you can think of, from forgery to a doctor who's out of control, everything you can think of. So let's not diminish the pharmacist's
role. Yeah, but you're sneaking some new material in here. Arthur Kaplan, let me turn to you on this. What are the boundaries of the pharmacist's leeway, their writ here, traditionally?
Well, they do have an obligation and duty to work with the customer, client, to make sure the prescription is appropriate, to double-check it. They're an extra screen to make sure that there are drug interactions.
And what about our caller Rita's point? She says, I've had my consultation. I don't want to have to reveal all this to the pharmacist. Is that a legitimate concern?
You don't have to. I mean, you have an absolute right to simply deliver the prescription, say the doctor prescribed this. You don't have to have discussions about your sex life or your plans for a vacation or anything else. However, I will come back and say that pharmacy is a profession, so is nursing, so is medicine. Mm-hmm. There is a conscience clause that we recognize that professionals have. I do think it's true that if somebody says, I'm running this drugstore, and if you're not filling these prescriptions, you're fired. I do think it's also the case that if a state or federal agency says, these are the minimal things you must do, say contraception to female troops in Iraq, and you won't do it, then you can't be in the service. That is, we respect your conscience, but there are certain places where you have to do what is required to carry out this job, so that undoubtedly will turn into a battle. But I wouldn't want to go the route to simply say, a pharmacist is a rubber stamp. I agree that just is not true.
Looks like we're going to be hearing a lot more on this front. Arthur Kaplan at the University of Pennsylvania,
Department
of Medical Ethics, thanks for being with us. Ed Martin, director of the Americans United for Life Center in St. Louis, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
And Karen Pearl, president of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America. Thanks for joining us, Karen.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. This is On Point. Ukrainian President Viktor Yushchenko is currently on his first visit to the United States since he came to power in the so-called Orange Revolution in January. At the White House yesterday, President Bush lauded Yushchenko's victory as an example of democracy for people around the world. Today, the Ukrainian president was given the 2005 John F. Kennedy Profile in Courage Award at the Kennedy Library in Boston. In accepting the award, Yushchenko expressed his personal admiration for President Kennedy and said that Ukrainians are ready to accept the challenges of democracy that Kennedy himself once laid out for Americans. Here is an excerpt from Viktor Yushchenko's address.
Ladies and gentlemen, dear friends, being chosen to receive this award is a great honor for me. It carries the name of a great man whose example inspires many people, myself included. We're not only referring to the example of courage in the face of physical pain which accompanied him in life. For me, President John Fitzgerald Kennedy became a symbol of courage and great foresight in politics that are always worthy to follow. He became an example of success to a new generation that entered politics. The Orange Revolution brought a new team to power in Ukraine. These are honest professionals and patriots, not encumbered by the old stereotypes of Soviet times. We and many other Ukrainians today are ready to repeat the words of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. We are led by the same desire to free Ukrainians from poverty and lawlessness, reaffirm justice and the rule of law. We want to make Ukraine one of the leaders of democracy, a flourishing nation among European peoples. We are answering a serious social challenge, and our answer is also founded on the conviction that we do not need to divide the economic pie, but rather want to enlarge it. We also know that if a free society cannot help the many who are poor, it cannot save the few who are rich. We wish to demonstrate a new model of politics, not one which is founded on public relations campaigns or political technologies. We do not want to manipulate the citizens of Ukraine, but unite them. I share the view of John Kennedy that politics cannot be just a competition for votes. Despite all external factors, a politician must fulfill his responsibility. Thus, dear friends, I view the honor of receiving this award as a confirmation of the mutuality of great ideas which today guide Ukraine and America. I also view this award as a recognition of all Ukrainians who stood up to defend their human dignity, democracy, and rule of law. These are the values which we profess together with the democratic world and that we are ready to defend. I believe that Ukraine and the United States will defend them together as strategic partners. Dear ladies and gentlemen, the award that I am today receiving symbolizes the light of hope. This light is lit by great individuals. It will shine for us even after they are gone. The challenge of President Kennedy always remains with us to establish the freedom. All this will not be finished in the first 100 days, nor it will be finished in the first 1,000 days, not even in the lifetime of this planet. These words were also continued by another great individual, John Paul II, when he said to Ukrainians and the entire world, "Do not fear." We heard these words, we will continue to follow them. May God bless America, may God protect Ukraine.
Нехай Бог благословить Америку, нехай Бог береже Україну.
Ukrainian President Viktor Yushchenko speaking today at the JFK Library in Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.